This is an ABC podcast.
This is Neat and Footy.
It's Sam and T summer sit downs
on ABC Radio Australia.
Malolele and welcome to Sam and T's Summer Sit Downs. This is where we sit down with a Neesian footy player and get to know their story through family and footy. We'll have some fun too, and they get control of the speaker, so expect a few songs to soundtrack that chat. My name is Sam Wykes, and with me each week is my Cook Island Koi, Tinido Arona T.
Kia ora, Sammy. Jeez, it's been awesome having these big convos with some of our Neesian stars, past and present. People like Will Hopewate, Jasmine Tupou-Witchman, Mel Kawa, and more. You can catch up with them too if you missed it via the Neesian Footy podcast or the ABC Pacific website. Sammy, you must have some cousins because we have another one of your family members on today's episode.
Yeah, T, another cousin on today, Sione Katoa, the older brother of Isaiah Katoa. But some may know, some may not, but he actually played 75 NRL games for Penrith and the Bulldogs, 11 times for Tonga, including that historic 29 win over Australia. Born in New Zealand, but when he moved to Australia as a teenager by himself to play for the Roosters in the Harold Matz age group team, he actually lived with a guy named Big Tom, aka my dad. And if anyone knows my dad before grandkids, tough man to live with. So I'm actually keen to just see how that was, but let's welcome to the show, Sione Katoa. Thank you so much for joining us, bro.
Thanks for having me, boys. Pleasure.
Well, we'll just kick it straight off. We're going to start with a bit of your family and where they're from in the Pacific. Obviously, we mentioned Tonga, but whereabouts is your village in the motherland?
Yeah. So my dad is Tongan. They're from Niwa Fa'au and Te Takamatonga in Tonga, and my mom is Cook Island, and she's from Arangi, so can't forget about that side of the family.
Sammy, Arangi, what?
Bears.
Yeah, there it is. The Arangi Bears.
Yes, I remember. Yeah. I knew it. Yes.
Have you gone back to either the Tonga or Cook Islands much?
I have before COVID, before 2019, 2020, but I haven't been back since, so I'm trying to get the family back to the motherland, show the kids around. So that's on come soon.
Are you closer to one culture than the other, or you both even?
I'm even because I grew up with both my grandparents. So obviously, you know, one side was the Cook Island side, one was the Tongan. So yeah, I sort of done everything like my Cook Island side. I did the dancing, played the instruments, played the drums. I know every wider, you know, every song that you can name. Then obviously on my Tongan side, the exact same thing, you know. My grandparents couldn't speak English, so the only way to learn was to speak Tongan. And fortunately enough for myself, you know, I can speak, you know, fluent enough Tongan to be able to speak with them. But on my Cook Island side, I can understand it, but I can't, you know, obviously speak fluent Cook Island. So, yeah, that was how it worked.
That's cool.
Mate, grandparents play a massive role in the upbringing of our Pacifica kids. What was it like growing up with both your grandparents on both sides, with all your siblings?
Yeah, man, it was awesome. You know, like I said, like, I'm close with all my cousins, both my Cook Island and my Tongan side. And then, you know, they sort of built the person I am today, to be honest. You know, I give them, you know, all the glory. Nothing against my dad and my mum and that, but they were just, you know, the perfect model of what I, you know, one side loved to drink, then the other side was the church side. So, you know, had a good mixture.
I'm already assuming which is which.
Guess that, please. Can you guess, please, T? Which is which?
I'll leave that to myself.
So, yeah, no, I had a very good mixture in life and had a very good upbringing.
Were you born in New Zealand?
Yeah, so I was born in New Zealand in Lower Heart Hospital, and then I sort of grew up in a little area called Pumare. You know, it was pretty rough, man, full of mobs. Like, so everyone knows Pumare, you know, it's full of manga mobs around there. But yeah, bro, you know, like every New Zealand kid, we just played on the streets, you know, running around bare feet, staying out till the lights turn on. Never had phones, so we always had to make, you know, had to entertain ourselves.
I remember the first time I actually met you, all as kids, you, Isaiah, and all the other siblings when I came over for, I think it was an under-15s tour with the Sydney team, and how you described it then, no shoes, snotty nose, just hanging on the scrum machine. There was about 1,000 of you there with all the other cousins. I was like, oh, I think they're my cousins over there. And we just walked over and just connected straight away. So, and nothing's changed now, even with adults, with all of you, still snotty-nosed and no shoes. But, you know, for your parents moving from Tonga, do you know much about the story from them living in Tonga and then moving over to New Zealand?
Yeah. So my grandfather, he moved over first. Him and grandma, they come over. Grandpa was trying to get a good, better life for the family, so he moved over. Then it was for church. And then they started the first Wesleyan Methodist Church in Wellington. So my grandfather and a few other Tongan communities, you know, they got together and started a church there. And then that was sort of, you know, what led to us being brought up in Wellington. The Cook Island side, they were the same. You know, grandma and grandpa come over. They just wanted a better life for themselves. They had my eldest uncle back home, and then the rest of them were built, you know, were born in Wellington. So that was sort of their upbringing and how they made it their way to Wellington.
Well, this whole time that we've crossed paths back in the day where we're both playing footy, and I never even knew that you guys were Cook Island, eh? I just thought because your last name Katoa and some of the Tongan features that you carry, I always thought, you know, you're always just full-blooded Tongan until, not only recently hearing that you were Cook Island and your brother was Cook Island, and I wish I knew earlier, then we could have shared that other half of the culture you were talking about. But your last name Katoa, you know, it's a pretty famous Tongan name. How many siblings do you have, you know, in your family?
Yeah, so I've got 5 siblings. We've got 4 boys, 1 girl. I'm the eldest of the 5. Obviously, everyone knows me and my younger brother, so I'm the oldest. Isaiah's the youngest. Then we've got 3 in between us. So I think growing up, you know, obviously having just 1 girl in the family, she was the golden child. You know, she got everything. And if you know the Tongan culture, man, the girls are always the boss in the family.
They definitely get all the they get everything, you know, at all the birthdays. They get the cakes, they get all the mats, they get all the money put on them. Nikita, share the love around at some point. And they end up looking after all of your kids, so that's where it gets returned.
That's right.
From there, they look after all the kids. But, you know, growing up with all your 5 siblings, what did you love most about the household and growing up with them?
Well, honestly, like growing up, man, we took nothing seriously. Eh? It was we just had fun. You know, me and my brother, Jacob, it's funny I tell this story because I can see it in my 2 boys now, my 2 oldest. So me and my brother, we would always play, like, you know, the knee rugby in the room, in the lounge room with the mattress. But I used to bully him. And then he said, oh, no, I don't want to play. And I used to force him to play. And then now I'm seeing that in my 2 oldest boys. You know, my eldest son, Chase and Creed. You know, Chase just bullies the younger one. The younger one cries and sulks. And then he tries to bribe him back, you know, come on, I'll go easy. And then end up just pumping him again. So, it was a very interesting, you know, upbringing.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, you speak highly about both your grandparents, you know, the Cook Islands and the Tongan side. What are, you know, some values that the greatest values that you think you learned from both sides of both cultures?
Probably, you know, the biggest ones are like, you know, your normal respect. You know, it doesn't matter. You always respect your elders. It doesn't matter if you're right or wrong. That was one of the big ones. Caring for people. Both my grandparents, mate, like there'll be a homeless guy on the street, bro. They'll bring them in the house, feed them. You know, if they needed a house to live in, bro, they were willing to keep them in there. At one stage, we would have like, you know, 12 cousins all sleeping there. So we were very, like, you know, caring family and orientated around that sort of thing. But their work ethic, Mara, is like second to none, man. They used to work hard, you know, 2-3 jobs. And ultimately, it gave us the life that we have now, you know. And that's something that, you know, that I would always remember and I always pass it on to, you know, my younger brother, the rest of my siblings and my kids, you know.
Your brother Jacob, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, swallowed the poison and that sort of ate something around his stomach where he has to be fed through a tube? Is that right?
Yeah, so you know the tupper cloth, the paint that they use on that?
Yeah.
And my grandma had it in a bottle, just a normal Coke bottle. Then he's gone to grab it while she was painting in that, and then he's drunk it, and it's burnt his insides. So his intestines, they had holes. So anytime fluid would go through, it would go out, and it would fill up, you know, where it's not meant to be going. So he had to get a tube put into his stomach, you know, and from a young age, we sort of didn't see it as any different because we sort of grew up with it. But as you get older, you sort of like realize how lucky, you know, he was to stay alive and live the life. Like they told him that he wouldn't live past 22, you know, and he's 27 now and doesn't even have the tube anymore. He can drink. So it all healed by itself. So, you know, we were always at the hospitals and we sort of didn't really understand how bad it was and how, you know, how bad it could have turned. But as we get older and we get our own kids, you start to realise how precious life can be.
Mm. So how old were you when that happened, being the older brother?
So I would have probably been about 6, 7. Like, he was pretty young, so I think he was about 4 or 5 when it happened. So then, yeah, then we grew up, you know, and obviously, like, we used to see him. So he used to lie down and get a tube through his, like, even when he used to play half-time, he used to come off the field, lay down. My dad used to connect the tube, put like a Powerade through it or water, and that was his like hydration.
So he was still allowed to play. I didn't realize he was still allowed to play.
Yeah. So he was still allowed to play. Like, he played until I think he was about 20, 21.
True.
Yeah, and that's how he used to get filled, you know.
Power out, man. So again, I know like the caring side of it, the nature side of it, that's what shaped you. But those moments like that, how else has that shaped you as a man today and how you look at life now being, you know, at the age of 30?
Oh, massive, bro. Like, you know, and like I said, because I've got kids myself now and I don't know what I'd feel like if my son was to ever do that. Like, it would just, it would cripple me. So, like, you know, stuff like that, you sort of, like, look at it and, you know, you take life so, you know, for granted sometimes and when you see those things, you're like, far out, you know, just live every day like it's your last.
Mm.
You know, take the little moments with your kids where it's taking them to the park, you know, you've had a big day at work, you're like, come on, man, I don't want to go to the park. You know, so, yeah, like, just little things like that.
You spoke about your, you know, your grandparents and them values, respecting the elders, you know, being caring and also the work ethic. Do you think as a, you know, it wasn't until you're older, as an older sibling, you know, did you feel like you had to pass those values on to your siblings and also now your kids as well?
Yeah, definitely, for sure. Obviously, I spent a lot of time with my two grandpas. Like, I used to go diving with my Cook Island grandpa, and then he used to take me, you know, everywhere. Like, I've been to Bora Bora, I've been to Tahiti, Moria, and I didn't realise, like, nowadays, mate, that's like luxury going there, you know. But back in the day, like, it was just a normal trip for me. My grandpa was like, yeah, let's go, we're going to go for a trip. You know, and then you got my Tongan grandpa. Brave, you know, my Tongan grandpa, he's like, he's Kava King.
Yeah.
And, bro, he used to take me to Kava, you know. He wouldn't let me drink it. He would let me have a little sip. But as I got older, he made me understood what, you know, what he was doing. And, you know, you sort of had to earn your respect there. And, you know, like Sammy knows, we used to have this big bowl, bro. It was like, I reckon 10
I could fit in it. I reckon I could fit in that bowl. It was massive. Right.
And that thing was like a punishment. You come late, you know. You'd be disrespectful in there, bro. That's the punishment. You're taking one of those.
The funny thing about your grandfather, it was our Uncle Offa. When I first toured with the Western Force, I went over there and I saw him. And he goes, hey, Sam, can I have some money for the smoke? And I was like, yeah, no worries, man. So I gave him $20, but he kept his hand there. And it was another $20, another $20. But $150 later, I was like, how expensive are these smokes? And he goes, oh, no, it's for the week.
That's all in the smokes were.
Yeah, mate, they were $5 yeah. or something back then. But he's a legend, man. He's only 4 foot nothing as well. But man, I love that bloke.
You're listening to Sam and T Summer Sit Downs, and this week we're joined by former NRL and Tonga player Sione Katoa. Sione, I know you're born in New Zealand, and growing up in New Zealand, it's every kid's dream to play for the All Blacks until we move to Australia, and it's nothing but rugby league. Yeah. Now, was that your dream as a kid growing up?
Yeah, 100%, man. All I wanted to do was play for the Hurricanes and, you know, the All Blacks. You know, just honestly, like, I used to picture myself in assemblies when we used to sing the anthem, bro, and I could just picture myself at Westpac Stadium. And obviously never done that. I ended up in the league industry, but that was definitely the dream.
So rugby union was your first sport?
Yeah, played rugby union all my life, and pretty much until I moved to Australia. And that's where rugby league started.
Oh, so your transition into rugby league was pretty much you signed a rugby league, or you came over from, the Roosters picked you up from the sport of rugby union.
Yeah, so the year that I actually started, I played like half a year in Wellington for the Randwick Kingfishers. And then we had a guy there, Pat Knox. He used to bring kids over here to give them a trial. So we all come over to Australia. And then that was sort of the transition, how we sort of come over and started, and we got picked up by the Roosters. So we went back home. They said, oh, we want to give you like a trial here to come play in the Harold Mats. And then that's how it sort of started for us. And then one thing, actually, my dad said, look, if you don't go over there and do well, I'm going to send you back to Tonga and go to school there. And I said, nah, stop that. I'm not going. So his school that he goes to back in Tonga is like a military school, and that's called the law. And I said, nah, I am not going to go back there, man. I'm going to give this a good crack.
Well, he definitely planted the seed of motivation. And force you not to go back to Tonga. When you transitioned over from Pomare to Sydney, what were some of the challenges that you had to face? Like things like leaving your family and, probably going in with
my dad.
Sam's dad. And wait, before we go there, Sam's dad, we're probably thinking of a big Tongan man, but if you think of KFC
or Santa Claus.
Santa Claus.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, Big Tom.
Yeah, man. It was at the start, I hated it. It was scary. Like, coming from Wellington and Pomare, where, like, on our street, three of my aunties used to live on my street, so we used to run that street, and then coming over here, like, I had nobody. I obviously had Sammy in there, but, like, I sort of only just met them.
Mm.
And it was daunting. Like, I still like going to the room. I mean, I don't really want to do this. Get mad homesick. It was well worth it, that's for sure. But it was tough at the time.
Well, other than the threat of your dad sending you back to Tonga, what do you think were some of the ways that you overcame that challenge of being homesick?
So one of the big ones was my Tongan grandpa. He was still alive at the time. I remember one time I went back for school holidays. And I told him, Grandpa, I've had enough. I can't do it anymore. And then he said to me, don't worry. Just keep praying when you're there. And, you'll reap the rewards. And I was like, bro. At the time, I was like, bro, this guy's crazy. I can't do this, bro. Like, I couldn't do it anymore. And then, honestly, I just put full faith into that. And I just grinded it out. And, pretty much, come out the other end. Like, loved it.
Oh, I spoke to your dad. And the funny thing is, I didn't even tell my parents that you were going to go live there. And I was living in Perth. I was already over there. I was like, no, he'll be all right. Just get him to stay in my room, my old room. Yeah. He'll be sweet. My brothers are down the road. But honestly, one of my motivations to move to Perth was actually to get out of home myself. But I thought, we'll send Sione in there. He'll be all right.
Yeah.
But on the real, like, how hard was it actually, the challenges of living with my parents there? Because my dad's a... you're scared to ask for a piece of fruit, he's angry the whole time. He did shift work, just that old school type of fella.
Steel.
Yeah, there's no emotion there. Eyes. But so how challenging was that to even just communicate and just be even in the house?
Yeah, bro, honestly, that was a really tough time. Like Sammy said, Tommy's a tough fella, but a good fella at heart.
Yeah.
I remember one incident there, I went into the kitchen, and I was making food, and I cleaned up, and then I grabbed the tea towel, and I wiped my face with it. And then he goes, oi, what are you doing that? And I was like, oh, shit, I was just trying to wipe my face. And he goes, bro, that's for the dishes. Bro, I put that thing down, bro. I went and sat in my room, and I was like, oh, shit, what's going on here?
And the way you said that was so polite compared to how his deep, grumpy voice would have been as well. Of just, oh.
That would have felt so awkward, going into, you just meet your new family and you left like a massive family in Pōmare, and you even got your own family living in the same street as you, and then you're too scared to wipe your face with the tea towel.
Yeah, well, it was crack. And I feel like, because, like, you know, for me, growing up in New Zealand, like, I'd always help the oldies, like, and I just said, oh, Tommy, I'll go do the lawns for you. And he said, nah, don't worry about it. And I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. I didn't go back out, bro. And it was funny, man. I used to find whatever excuse to stay out of the house, just so I sort of didn't have to face that. And, like, I used to just come there, go to sleep, you know. And, you know, I used to have good conversations with Annie, Sammy's mom. You know, she was a lovely lady, but Big Tom, oh, bro, he was a tough bloke. And it was funny, but, like, a couple of years later when I moved out, I had my own kids. I talked to one of my other cousins, Patrick. He went overseas. And it was funny, like, for me to see Tom, he was talking about my journey in it. Like, and I could see that he was, like, so proud of it. And I knew he like, you know, he was a good man at heart. Just at the time, it was just, I don't think it was the right thing to happen.
It was, mate. Honestly, we talk about it now. He's so proud of, like, seeing yourself, you played, and then Isaiah coming through, and Patrick. He's softened up since he's had grandkids. But knowing that that you, like, all came under his guidance.
Oh, you forgot about yourself, mate.
Yeah. No, I'm good. But, like, if you survive Tom, mate, you could survive anything. But, like, he's proud of all of you and the men you are today. So you went to Patrician Brothers Blacktown, went through a pretty amazing system there into the Penrith system. You end up making your debut for Penrith. What was that like, you know, achieving, like, the highest of highs like that, making your debut for a famous club?
Yeah, man, it was honestly, like, it was what you dreamt of, you know, as a young kid. And mine actually come pretty, like, pretty late, because I think I remember at the time, he actually got injured and he ruled himself out. And then, I think it was Uppy ended up moving from hooker to half, and then I come on the bench and being the backup hooker. And then I remember the joke Ice used to say, bro, half your matches after, eh? Thank me later.
Is that Isaac John?
Yeah. Isaac John.
So he was at Penrith as well. Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, he was one of the boys there. So, yeah, no, it was a good experience. And then I've got me in the gym there. He said, hey, mate, you ready to play this week? And I was sort of like, oh, what? He goes, yeah, you're going to be on the bench. And then, yeah, it sort of happened so quickly too, you know. At the time, you're just like, just going, you know. It was just a normal day at the office, and then all of a sudden you're playing.
That's so cool. Who was the first family member you told?
Oh, my parents. Yeah, nah, they were over the moon, man. Like, it was funny because this is how it actually happened, because my missus was pregnant with my eldest son. So I told him that I was debuting, and then I dropped the...
At the same time.
Oh, too smart, bro, too smart.
Couldn't make it easier, though.
Oh, you must have prayed for that one as well, because you know those Tongan ways, you must be married before you have kids.
Yeah, 100%.
Was there ever a time during that week that you got to have some quiet time and reflect on the journey that, you know, coming as a young kid from Pōmare and then going all the way to Australia and then about to achieve something special and, you know, live your dream and playing in the NRL?
Nah, because I got told on the captain's run, so it was sort of happened so quickly. And like you said, like, it wasn't until a bit later in life when I started realising, like, it's like, bro, I came from this one town that all I thought was, you know, Pōmare was the way of life, you know. I never thought I'd be in a big city, you know, trying new things, let alone, you know, playing an NRL game. It wasn't a bit till later on that I started, like, you know, getting some gratitude to, like, what I'm actually doing and the job and the life I'm living.
Rugby league, rugby union, professional sport, there's probably more downs than ups. We like to talk about those ups, but, man, there's plenty of downsides or lessons that you learn along the way. You move to the Dogs. You know, there's obviously the COVID periods, but you had some injuries along the way. How did you manage some of those, you know, those down periods, and what was your biggest challenge during your career?
My biggest challenge was the last 2 years of my career. We faced the tough times at the Bulldogs, where, you know, I think I played probably close to 40 games there, and I think we won like 3 games in that period. And yeah, that was probably the hardest part of football, you know. Like I'm not even kidding, like We trained so hard during preseason, you know, flogged. Like, I was the fittest I've ever been. And then to come onto the field and just, like, not have it work, it was, like, real frustrating. And, like, you know, if you're a footy player, like, and you're like, bro, what's going on? Like, you know, you just flogged yourself. Like, you're fit as, like, and just, it's just not clicking, you know. And, yeah, that was definitely the hardest part, you know, in my career. But by then I sort of had kids, you know. So, you know, going, losing it on the weekend, then coming to home and seeing my kids, you know, just run amok. Right, they got no idea what just happened on the weekend or what dad just went through, you know, and it sort of just, like, eased it off a bit, you know. I was just like, there's more to life than just a game that we just lost on the weekend. So that was, yeah, definitely the toughest times.
Yeah, I think you're right. The bubble that you get trapped in, and you think that, you know, the result on the weekend, it starts to affect the way that you live. But then when we come home to our families and we see your young little kids running around and, you know, whinging or moaning or laughing, and then you get to spend that time with your partner as well, it's just brings everything into perspective. So, yeah, that was probably one of the techniques I used, was get around the family.
Oh, you have to, because if you ride those emotions, man, you can just get stuck in and it affects every other part of your life. Your retirement, you know, moving on, like, obviously you're still pretty young now, but when you decided to retire, you know, why did you decide to hang him up at that time when you probably still had more to give?
Yeah, so this, obviously, this was part of the flow-on effect from, you know, the tough times of the game. I sort of, like, I got to a point, man, honestly, in 2021, bro, I used to rock up to games. I sort of, like, I was like, bro, I don't want to play today. And I think at that point in life, I was like, bro, this is not for me anymore. You know, and at the time, I just said to myself, I'm just going to have a break and I'll come back. And then that's what sort of happened, you know. I sort of, like, I had clubs, you know, offer me to go back in 2022, but I was just like, bro, I couldn't give him my all anymore. And you know what professional footy is like. You're trying to, you know, hustle. You got to give your all. That's no point. And then, yeah, that's sort of how it started. I just thought, I'll just have a year off and I'll get back into it. And then it was a pretty scary transition. I didn't know what I was going to do. I just sort of just like, oh, I'll just go just do some labouring job and just start working and just keep myself busy until I know what I'm going to do. And then that sort of happened. And then I come across a couple of ex-players that I used to play with back at school, and they were playing at Southport. And then it sort of just been like, they said, oh, come play here. And I was like, nah, bro, I've had enough of football. I didn't want to go in. You know, I didn't want anything to do with it. And they said, no, it's good, bro. Like, it's like decent money, you know, for what you do. You only train 2 days a week, play on the weekend. And I was like, oh, all right, I'll come have a meeting. And then didn't realise, you know, Clive Palmer was sponsoring the club. And then you went there, bro, they had the book there ready for you. You know, they threw everything to you because I was fresh out of first grade. So, you know, they looked after me and my family, and that was the best thing I ever done, man, and that I went back and played the game for what it was when I was growing up, you know, like, just loving it, bro. It didn't matter what mistake you made on the field, you know, you just kept going. Mm. Whereas when you're playing first grade, you know, there's always some second thoughts or, you know, very daunting. So to go back to the local football was, like, you know, I think the best thing I ever done.
I agree. I think that transition out of the game and going to play, whether it's New South Wales Cup, Ron Massey, and then even myself playing for my junior footy club this year, St. Clair Comets, it's, hey. It helps you filter away from, you know, that NRL scene and the game and being a full-time professional. But what do you think it was that made you feel, like, get those feelings of, like, fatigue and not wanting to turn up and play? Do you think it had something to do with, you know, it's starting to feel like a job? Or, yeah, what was that, them thoughts for you?
Yeah, definitely, man. It was like, you know, a mix of everything, you know, losing. Like, people, you know, don't realise, like, when you lose, it becomes a habit, you know. You sort of, like, get into a situation. We had many games where we were in it, and then we just didn't know how to ice it. You know, we give it our all and then lose it by golden point, or, you know, we're letting a try at the end. But, you know, it was just a contributing factor of a lot of things in football in itself. Mm. You know, dealing with getting dropped from teams, you know, coaches, you know, having different opinions, And you just get to a point where you're like, stuff this, like, I don't want to talk to anyone, I don't want to deal with this sort of crap, you know.
Yeah.
And that's how it sort of felt.
And do you feel like you found the love for the game, rugby league again, when you went to Southport?
Yeah, definitely, man. Like, it was the best thing, man. Like, you went there and then you had boys, you know, bricklayers, builders, bro, they were going slugging out, then coming here, bro, and just loving it, like, you know, smiling, having the best time of their lives. And, like, you know, here I was playing the game and getting paid for it, and I was hating it.
Yeah.
Well, Southport was definitely over the salary cap because they had Israel Folau, Johnny Folau, yourself.
Michael Oldfield.
Palante. Yeah. But I really appreciate you opening up like that because it's a common thing, like what T said around, you know, what are those feelings that you're feeling when you want to retire? Why didn't you want to, you know, play that game when it's someone's dream?
Mm.
And go, yep. How can you think like that? You're going to play in front of thousands of people. You're getting paid well, but that pressure can get to you. And sometimes you just do want to hide away and go, please don't talk to me. I don't want to see a comment. I just don't want to be a part of it anymore. So I really appreciate you opening up like that. It's something that everyone needs to hear, how to ground themselves and learn to navigate that space.
You're listening to Sam and T Summer Sit Downs, and this week we're joined by the Tongan hairdresser and former rugby league player, Sione Katoa. Now let's talk about, you know, representing the red jersey, your beloved Kingdom of Tonga. Man, first of all, where did that journey start for yourself?
Yeah, so I made my debut in 2015. I played my first test match for Tonga. We played at the old Parramatta Stadium when it was still there. We played against Samoa. So that was my first taste of, you know, the MMT colours.
What was it like? Again, you've mentioned to your parents that you've made your debut. What was it like this time around saying that you're going to represent the red jersey?
Yeah, I think like back then it was sort of like, because Tonga was never a big thing. My parents were still happy, you know, like they were still happy that we, you know, I got the chance to go and play for Tonga. But, you know, then it was sort of like it was like second nation, you know, no one really cared about those games back then. And it was just like a little extra thing to just get $500 for the week, you know, that was sort of the payment back then.
Oh, you should see how much they're earning these days.
But 700.
Well, let's go straight to that transition and where, you know, those superstars started to come, and it really changed the game, the international game, that level of, you know, being representing teams like Tonga, teams like Samoa. You know, what do you think started the movement for the MMT?
Yeah, definitely the big signings of Jace, Andrew Fafita, Manu Ma'u, Yejo, Silwak Taukeaho. You know, those boys, they were all in their prime and they were destined to play Kiwis for sure. And that was 2017, and, you know, when they made the changeover, I think they sort of didn't really think that it was going to be as big as the movement as what it is, you know, that everyone sees it as today. They were just like, no, let's just go back and play for our nation. But yeah, like now you see the, you know, the rewards in it now, you know, all our Tongan kids, bro, that's all they look up to now, you know. You don't see any of them kids in a black jersey or green and gold anymore, you know. They all want to be in that red jersey. So I think definitely those boys, you know, making the movement is what it is today.
When you had your first team meeting and they all, yeah, when you receive your kit and you come in and you sit in there and the coach addresses the room. Now, how was that feeling when you're looking around and all the big names are there and that genuine feeling of, oh, we could actually go pretty well here with all these guys?
Yeah, bro. Honestly, it was like, because our first game was in Cairns and we went up there. We played a trial game the week before in Tully against Italy. Like, you know, we had a gun team. But, like, because we're just Tongans, bro, we just, like, we all bantered together. Like, doesn't matter if you played 300 games or one game, you know. There was no stigma, bro. Like, you're getting mocked. Like, you know, woof, bro, our coach was always getting mocked, you know. Like, that's just the banter we had in our team, you know. Like, doesn't matter, you know. Someone will get up and try, you know, have a serious conversation. But he'll probably get daxed or someone will do something to them,
someone,
you know.
Someone pulled the coach's pants down.
Nah, not the coaches. Well, that's next level
if they did that.
You know, but your John Hopwaters, you know, your assistant coaches, bro, they were getting daxed for sure. You know, but that's just the humour we had as Tongans, you know, like it was crazy, man. Like, and I pinch myself still to this day that I got to play with, you know, your Jace, Andrew Fafitas, your, you know, Adam Fanua Blake, all those boys, you know, that have come through, Daniel Tupou. You know, there's so many of them now, like, it's just like far out. You know, we made a big movement.
A massive movement. And when you fast forward to 2019 and that historic win, it always reminds me of Goni Harrell's tattoo on his quad, where he's got the score, Tonga versus Australia, and that huge victory. Yeah, what was that moment like for yourself?
Yeah, bro, it was crazy, man. Like, for us to win that, like, it was funny, we talked with the boys, and like, we talk about it now, we're like, bro, we knew we were going to win. For some reason, we just had this feeling, because we beat Great Britain the week before, and like, we were dominant the whole time. Like, you know, we were bashing them, you know, like, we scored a few good tries, you know, they've scored a few ones, and then going into that Australian game, we just backed ourselves, like, you know, no matter what, you know, we were doing it, like, and then funny you said that about the tattoos, you know, I got the tattoo myself, the score.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you've so got it as well.
Yeah.
There it is. Oh, there it is, on the arm.
So, no, it was, you know, definitely something, you know. So me, Adam Funnel Blake and Joe, when we went back to Tonga, this American guy, he was there for the event. He goes, bro, anyone wants tattoos? And then he was like, yeah, sweet. And he'd come and done that for us. It was just, you know.
That's mad.
It was crazy, man.
A genuine tattooist, though, yeah? Not
just one of those freshies.
Yeah, okay. So,
yeah, it's got the pen and the rubber band. And
that's it, hey?
Flick, 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 flick.
The old jail-style ones. A lot of your games actually were in New Zealand as well. So we think back to the World Cup, even that game you're talking about now. And with all your New Zealand family there, how hard was it to divvy out the tickets?
Oh, mate. I told them, look, I'm getting 6 tickets, and then I bought like maybe 10 or 20 tickets. I said, that's all. I said, you guys dealing with yourself, you know. I said, like, bro, I could not cater for all my family. You know, my grandma's 1 of 15, bro. Like, there was no chance.
You know, was there much of
enough tickets for all of them.
Was there much of the Cook Island side asking for any tickets?
Yeah. Actually, yeah, a few of my close cousins, my first cousins, they were living there. You know, they come.
They were Tongan for the weekend.
They're all wearing their red jerseys and stuff. So,
so how did, you know, with all the preparation, they would have known where the hotel was. And like all the families, they're bringing food, they're bringing something. They've got to bring something. Like, how did you navigate that space of like, hey, I'm going to play the biggest game of my life against Australia or England in the semi-final. Please, I need some rest. Like, how did you navigate that?
Yeah, bro, like, because my grandma, she, like, I'm not even joking, bro. Like, God love her. She would always come if I was playing in Auckland, right? And she's coming there, like, with her, like, red jersey. Like, she would have banners, like, you know, come and sit in our lobby, in our foyer there. And then I remember one week we were in Hamilton, she brought Lou. And this was, like, the night before the game. And Wolfie come out, and he walked out, and he walked past, and because I was in the chili bin, and he goes, I hope that's not for you. And then I was like, no, I'll bring it for, you know, for everyone, like the staff and that. And then, you know, like, that's just like our Tongan people, bro. Like, didn't matter, like, big game or small game, they just bring whatever, bring food. Like, and that was my grandma, bro. She brings some, like, all the time, man.
It's funny, too, they don't care who's in the room, whether you're NRL coach or your GM. Whatever they want to bring that's coming into the room.
Yeah.
And you're not saying anything. You know, it's my grandma.
Like, yeah.
You must be the only player in the world to have a 100% record against Australia. Win rate.
Probably.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, definitely. It's
fun fact, anyway. What about seeing your younger brother now? I'll just quickly touch on that one. Seeing him come through the ranks and seeing him put on that red jersey and where it is today. How does that make you feel as a big brother?
Yeah, proud, bro. Like, you know, definitely proud moment, you know, because for him, I think if I didn't do it, I'm definitely sure he would have went to New Zealand. And for him to sort of see the spectator side of things when I was playing, you know, and then obviously seeing all the boys make the movement, like, speaking from him, I don't think he'll ever go back to New Zealand. You know, whether the money's there or not, he could never turn his back on the island nation. You know, I always told him, I said, "Hey, one day we'll go back to our 15 stars and represent that side as well." You know, I definitely want to do that. You know, represent that side of my grandparents.
I won't lie, I've already tried to plant a seed in your brother's mind. I think it was like early last year, we done a club visit at the Dolphins. I'm like, "So I hear you're half Cook Island, mate." And then he's like, "Yeah, yeah." I heard you're pretty close to your Cook Island side too. So yeah, we tried to...
Yeah, not that close, mate. But kick back.
Just we'll let him do his thing in the Tongan team, because I think he's playing a real pivotal role, and I think he's the difference. Yeah, with... when you look at our Pacific nations, it's always that missing piece, you know, having a quality NRL day in, day out, week in, week out, NRL halfback. Yeah. So I think he's going to, you know, make some huge moves in the Tongan scene in the near future. But one thing I love about you right now, you know, you're transitioned from the professional scene and now you set up your own barber business. Looks like it's doing pretty well. And how did that all come together?
Yeah, I think it sort of come together. I said, when I finished retiring, I sort of jumped from jobs, a few jobs, you know. I was just like, oh, okay, keep busy. I was doing a containering job for one of the boys, and I was picking containers. Then I was running the crew, and then the person I was doing it for sort of done the duties. And I was like, fuck. At that point, I was like, bro, do I want to keep working for people? And I was like, you know, I just thought to myself, nah, like, stuff there. Like, I don't want to work for anyone anymore. Like, you know, I want to work for myself. And then me and my business partner, John, you know, he was the barber. And then I said, "Hey, do you want to open up a shop?" So we opened up a shop, and then he was like, "Oh, yeah." And I said to him, I said, "All right, we're doing it." So I sold my house. I said, you know, nah, so after selling my house, I'm going to get into business. You know, I want to give this a good crack. And at the time, I sort of, like, didn't think of, like, how it was going to turn out. I just said, "Nah, let's just do it. If we do it and it goes good, it goes good. If not, we're going to be ending up back in that container again."
Yeah, you got to cut the hair of the Tongan team during the recent test matches. Who was the most fussiest there in terms of, you know, making sure that fade was lined up nicely, and did they trust you as well? Like, what was that like there?
I heard there was a few eyebrows.
Eyebrows. It's a bit different now.
Eyebrows, funny legs. You say that, bro. The one that was the most pickiest one was not even the one that was playing, bro.
Who was it?
John Hopwadi, bro. Because he had this mullet. He's got a mullet that he's growing. And it was funny because I got one of my young apprentices to cut him. And then as he got up to the sit on the seat, he goes, "Hey, make sure you cut my hair properly else I'll hire you." and like, for people that don't know English, it was mean like, "If you don't cut my hair properly, I'll give you hiding after this." And yeah, but John O'Brien, he was pretty, you know. "Make sure you don't touch the back. Make sure you don't cut it too short there." It was good. Yeah, I didn't get on the tools with those fellas, you know. That was a bit out of my league. I got the proper boys to do that. So, yeah, it was a good experience for the boys.
And what's some advice that you'd give to a footy player that may be thinking of transitioning into business? Yeah, some advice that you probably would have loved to hear when you were playing.
Yeah, probably when I used to play, like, you know, you used to get, like, the welfare people, they used to jump on your back, "Hey, make sure you're doing something, make sure you do your courses." I think for me, one thing I regret was not utilising that, you know, and just, it doesn't matter what you do, like, just do it, because once you finish your course, you know, you got something at the end of, you know, when you finish. And I think, you know, doing stuff like that, because football, like I said, it doesn't go forever, you know, and you don't want to come out of there, like, and then end up in a warehouse. You know, that's the last thing you want to do. So I think, you know, utilising all your networks, you know, sponsors, bro, if you want to go network with sponsors, save your chippy, you know, there's always a bloody builder sponsor in the club, you know, so you go do some work with them. Just like utilising that sort of stuff. And then understanding how to manage your money. You know, us when we were playing, it was like, you got so much money, so you think you've got that money, you can spend it. Stuff like that, you know. And I'm glad for me, you know, I can help my little brother with that.
Mm.
you know, whereas when I was there, we used to just blow it by the weekend. So, and we used to get paid monthly. So by the end of the month, like, you're living off miggery noodles.
The childhood memories come back again. But it's really important advice around that. There's plenty of programs in place now with all the clubs where you get to study and it's paid for, and it's not necessarily that's what you're going to do when you finish, but it's more that momentum, that life momentum of just accomplishing something, and you can move on to the next. Oh, I can do that. I can do that. And it can build momentum when you do finish. But we are going to get to some fun stuff. T, kick us off with one of the fun questions.
All right. So you've got a big pig already on the spit, and you've one of those big, big ones, and you've only got, you know, a couple hours to finish it. Now, you can invite two of your ex-teammates. Which two players will you invite? So the three of you have to finish this whole pig in 2 hours.
Oh, that's a hard one. I reckon one teammate I'll probably definitely get would probably be Saliva Havili. He's definitely one that I think would know how to get it done, you know, being around it long enough. And then maybe Conrad Harrell.
Yeah,
you know, good being choice. Back at home, it's not his first rodeo. He'll be able to, you know, get it done.
All right, perfect. I'm going to go start one, bench one, cut one. Okay.
Ooh.
But it's a bit different here, a little bit of a twist here. It's about some of the uncles that you have who thought they were pretty good, and you get to play with them. So Alana Sicometti, her dad, Brian Sicometti, apparently he said he was pretty good. So he's one of them. You got your dad, Kotoni Katoa. He told me he was pretty great. And then your uncle, Siu Katoa. He told me he was the next Tana Umanga. Who are you going with there?
I think I'd probably start Siu.
Really?
Yeah, I reckon.
So he was the next Tana?
He was, bro. He could move and he's still got it now. He's obviously a bit, you know, had a few kegs on, but he definitely got them big calves, mate. He's still got
them. Huge. Huge. Okay, so he's starting, yep.
Or I reckon bench my dad. Yeah, because he gives too much advice, bro. He can just give advice from the sideline. And Uncle Brian, bro, he's a different character, bro. He's definitely getting caught. God love my Uncle Brian, bro.
God love you, but yeah, you can't. I watched him play one game. He said he was pretty good. Bro, he left the floor and coat-hanged someone, and he was only on there for 2 minutes, sent off. So good decision, mate. Good decision. But, Sione, honestly, bro, from the bottom of my heart, man, it means a lot for you to be on here, be vulnerable, you know, go through your life and understand there's more to it than just footy, and some of our younger generation need to hear that. And for both of us here, man, we really appreciate you jumping on and opening up like that.
Hard.
So we're just going to leave it right there. Hopefully we get to see you and your brother play together at some point in the 15 stars. Later on in the over 40s. not now in your prime or anything like that. But, yeah, we wish you all the best for the future.
Appreciate you, brother. Mei taki mata.
Thank you, guys.